We'll have the game tonight at 6:30 for you here on your home of the NBA playoffs, ESPN 700. Joined right now by the coach, David Thorpe, who joins us on Tuesdays to talk about the NBA playoffs. You find him on Twitter, at Coach Thorpe. Hi, David. How are you?
Hey, doing great. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Anything surprise you about last night's game, or without Leonard, without Parker, without David Lee, minor player, I understand, was the inevitable just the sweep?
Yeah, I mean, what if you took out Durant and, like, maybe not Klay Thompson, but maybe Klay Thompson or Zaza even, how it's going to do against a fully healthy Spurs team, because that's what you're dealing with. You're missing a Hall of Fame point guard that has played well in a couple games in the playoffs already in Parker, and, of course, a top three or four player in the world in Kawhi Leonard and against a super team. I mean, it's Golden State's been lucky, really. They've been able to beat Portland without Nurkic, who is the reason why they surged into the 8 seed to begin with. Then, of course, George Hill went down after game one in that series, and Golden State probably wins both of those series and maybe sweeps those teams, but it was certainly easier without those guys. And then, of course, the big injury. First, Parker's out before the series starts, and then Kawhi. It's been an easy run, in part because they're great, but also in part because their opponents are beat up.
Well, they will now get 9 days rest as they await what will likely be the Cleveland Cavaliers. Before we kind of turn the page on that series, I don't know if it's the case. They sure treated it that way last night, but Manu Ginobili may have played his final NBA game and may have played his final game in front of the Spurs, Spurs faithful. What a career. I knew it, and then I went back and looked at his bio last night as he was getting the standing ovations and everything else. And I know we oftentimes talk about Dirk Nowitzki and a few others as being the best international or foreign players of all time. Well, you look at that resume in NBA and Italian and Argentine resume, he's a Hall of Famer for sure, but that's a pretty good international resume coming to the NBA and a pretty good career, David.
I'm not sure I could add anything to what you said except for this. He made it cool to come off the bench. Think about what you just said. He's a surefire Hall of Famer because, remember, he's got gold medals too, right? And a great European career as a late second round pick coming to the NBA, and you wouldn't even expect it that. The guy only went to two All-Star games. That is a credit to the culture in San Antonio, credit to Pop, but also credit to Manu, who I think he got big picture, because Pop said something last night that a lot of us have known for a long time. In terms of competitiveness, he's like Gordon Hayward is a sweet-looking boy that wants to crush your skull. Manu's the same. This is a very, very competitive dude, and yet he was willing to not just come off the bench, but to do so without any regret, any remorse that we could see. It didn't affect the fabric of the culture of the team at all. He just played incredibly well as a star in so many games. That you really can't say enough about what he represents, I think, to the soul of the game. He's one of the true ambassadors of our sport since I've been alive.
He's been fantastic. A two-time All-Star, two-time third-team All-NBA, a sixth man of the year, four-time NBA champ, All-Rookie, not to mention All-Euroleague, Euroleague Championship, All-Italian, All-Italian League multiple times, and, of course, as you mentioned, gold medal winner with Argentina in 2004.
Yeah, I mean, that I think that as a skills coach myself and as a guy who's coaching young players through my son now and everything and his friends and team and teams, actually, the comment about competitiveness is what really sticks with me the most, because ultimately it's a battle. Basketball is not for the weak. It is an artistic, gorgeous, beautiful game, but it's about punching people in the head as often as possible, metaphorically, right? And that's what this guy does. He is a very competitive dude. And for him to do that within the construct of, I'm not going to restart and not enjoy that notoriety as a starter, because it's the best thing for our franchise, and he did it so almost exclusively, says a lot about the character of him. So he should be president of Argentina one day, but it's too bad he can't be president of America. He's really an amazing guy. He really is.
Well, I'll tell you what. I saw a great picture this morning that I think would have been talked about more had he been coaching. But Steve Kerr was one of his teammates early in his career when he joined the Spurs.
Well, yeah, Miner's played with a lot of dudes, and I just never. I mean, we ever heard a single negative word about him. I actually watched the game live on TV when he caught the bat in Mexico City. You can't make this stuff up. So maybe people who love bats don't like him, but this guy doesn't have a negative thing to say, and he represents what we're trying to get our players in the NBA to do, but also kids play basketball everywhere, boys and girls. You want to be like Manu.
Well, if he can come back and play another year, God bless him, because yeah. You know, play as long as you possibly can and play at that high level, and I'm sure the Spurs would welcome him back, probably at a little lower salary, but they'd certainly welcome him back next year. David Thorpe's with us here on the Bill Riley Show, a longtime coach and trainer. Find him at Coach Thorpe, also the author of a book called Basketball is Jazz, Stories and Lessons from a Basketball Lifer. So we saw LeBron look human, disinterested, out of sorts, use whatever term you want, but he didn't look like the LeBron we're used to seeing the other night. And I guess every 3 or 4 years you're allowed to have a game like that in the playoffs. But I didn't necessarily buy the whole, well, his shot was off that particular night. Something was off, but I wouldn't blame the shot, because we've seen plenty of nights where LeBron shots off, and when he decides to attack the basket at 6'9" and 260 pounds, nobody gets in his way. So there was something going on, but I wouldn't make a big deal out of it unless it happens again tonight, too, in Cleveland. What did you make of the performance, and what do you think happens tonight, David?
So this is really the crux of the question here. I just tweeted this out a little bit ago. Players who are out of gas, they don't get it back. That does not mean he's out of gas, and I'll address that in a second here, but just think back to last year's finals. Steph Curry wasn't just out of gas, he was also injured. So we don't know all of what's going on with LeBron, but I know this. Steph Curry couldn't beat Kevin Love in isolated space in Game 7. He was awful for the Warriors, and quite frankly, shouldn't have played. They should have got him out early. I think they would have won that game had they just sat Steph. They were better without him. He was just terrible. Think about James Harden. Sometime in the third quarter, I think, in Game 5 in San Antonio, when they had that big lead, and then he just died basically in the fourth quarter and was dead in Game 6 at home, and the Spurs blew them out without Kawhi Leonard. Maybe LeBron had got the flu. Maybe LeBron had a back spasm. There's a lot of things that could have been wrong with him that could be fixed for tonight. Or maybe the tank is empty. And we're going to find out real fast, because here's my thing. If it's empty and he is bad again tonight, it doesn't mean they'll lose. They've got two other All-Stars, and Boston had a great shooting performance of Marcus Smart. Maybe he'll do it again. He's shooting better in the postseason, but maybe not. He's not a good shooter over the course of the year. But if Boston wins and LeBron is lethargic again and slow, I'm not at all convinced he's going to turn around for Game 6 either.
I agree with you. That's why I said I don't look badly on it if it's one game, but if it's back-to-back games and he looks lethargic again and not playing, that to me then means something's up. One game, not so much. Two games in the postseason in the playoffs at home, that becomes a little bit of a disturbing trend if you're Ty Lue, right?
That's exactly right. Right. So if he's just like Brian Winters just reported on ESPN Sports Center, that LeBron, we can track speeds now with companies like Second Spectrum that people have access to. LeBron was the slowest player on the court on average, which is exactly the opposite of what he typically is. So, yeah, something's going on there. If it's that way again and people report it, then we know there's something beyond it. It could be an injury. No one knew about Steph Curry's injury talk this season. The series is over last year. We all knew he was just exhausted. It was both that did him and the Warriors in. It'll be something we really have to track. This game tonight, if the people who think Cleveland's just going to roll, they're just assuming LeBron is Superman. I'm not making that assumption. I want to see it. And that's exactly right. Lou's got a problem if LeBron just has nothing left to give, because now you got to go back to Boston for Game 5, and you know you're getting a Game 6 but at home again. But if he can't do it in Games 3 and 4, why are we assuming he'll do it beyond that? Unless it's some kind of strain or stretched or whatever, you know, some kind of hamstring or muscle that's just bothering him. That can be relieved over the course of the next couple of days.
Yeah, because you said out of gas, and I, you know, he plays lots and lots of minutes and did all year long, but Cleveland's had a fair amount of rest this postseason. Wouldn't you be surprised if he was out of gas?
I would be, although I don't know that it matters once he gets. I think the minutes are cumulative no matter how much rest you get. In other words, I just, you can't do this year round. We couldn't do this. We couldn't have the finals in, you know, August with lots of rest between games. That there has to be a real opportunity for the players to completely recharge. Again, I'm not saying that's the case with LeBron. I'm just saying if it is, then no amount of rest will matter over in the construct of, you know, a week of a playoff series. He'll need more than that. But no, I think probably something was bothering him. Like, for example, maybe he was afraid his hamstring was going to snap. And so he just didn't want to push it. Because I know one thing, he didn't push it. That's what we know. He did not push it much in that game. So it might be that there's a fear there. Maybe he's over the fear. Maybe it was relieved and so there's no problem at all. I'm just saying this first half is must-watch NBA basketball because we might have a real series on our hands again.
Is your expectation Cleveland wins tonight if LeBron is LeBron, or is it a series if he's not LeBron?
No, I think if he's LeBron, as we've been expecting, I think Boston will play tough as heck. I don't know that they can continue to play with the incredible urgency they played with last game. I also think Cleveland stunk in the second half and stood around when they're up 21 and just they lost their focus out without doubt. They lost their focus. It's hard to get it back in the same game, but it's not hard to get it back the next game. So I think we'll see a better Cleveland tonight, especially if LeBron is healthy. Boston could win still, but they'd have to just shoot incredibly well. They, you know, 18 to 22 threes is a magic number. They did it last game. They could do it again. But Cleveland's still a very strong favorite, assuming LeBron is even, you know, 80%.
David Thorpe with us for a couple of more minutes here on the Bill Riley Show. Jazz had a bunch of people working out. They have all the NBA teams that aren't in the playoffs now are working guys out. Take our listeners a little bit behind the scenes, David. You were part of this and still are in some ways. When they're bringing Kyle Kuzma from Utah in today and they're bringing in, you know, Kennedy Meeks from North Carolina and they're bringing in, you know, DJ White or whoever it might be, the kid out of Michigan, what are these teams looking for? Because it can't necessarily be on the court stuff because they've got a year, two, 3 years of tape to look at these guys. Certainly they'll look at some of it, but what are these workouts for 3 hours in a morning in Salt Lake City and then on to L.A. mean for these teams?
Well, I mean, there's some variables there. You're right that they, you know, it's not always on court, although they will oftentimes allow a player through drills and situations they can set up in their game that they do, you know, 2-on-2, 3-on-3 is the maximum you can do. They will maybe put him, let's say, for example, DJ White, they might have put him in the pinch post. They might even let him play guard. He's a guard, really. He's just a really tall one. He's like Joakim Noah. So let him do some things starting to facilitate maybe something he didn't do very much of at Michigan. So they'll see if a guy has stretched his game. They'll do spot shooting and other shooting drills, and they video everything and track everything. But they're also taking your temperature as a young professional. These guys are flying to these workouts. They're not flying with their team, their coach, their agent. They're by themselves. I know when I was doing it for real, I would have, you know, 1 to 6 guys drafted every year. It was kind of a big business I ran. I don't do it anymore, really. It just was like teaching the same grad school class 20 years in a row. I got bored because they're all the same. Lottery picks or not, they're all making the same mistakes, and it's not so fun and challenging. But it's exciting to be part of it. We would talk, Courtney Lee was a great example. He did, you know, 20 workouts in 26 days, and we talked about wear a polo, tuck it in. When they pick you up at the airport, put your phone in your pocket and put it on silent. Never let them see your cell phone. Be respectful. You never know if the person is driving you is an assistant coach. He might be, you know, I used to say they all might be spies. Assume everyone's evaluating you. When you're supposed to show up at 7 o'clock, be there at 6:15. All those kinds of things. They're watching you. How do you relate to people? How do you talk to people? How polished are you? Things they can't find out necessarily when they go watch you play a game, or even they talk to their college coach, because it's more structured. You're on your own. And if you choose to dress shabbily or not be on time or whatever, that's a big red flag, and they're looking for those.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm going to guess these workouts could be the difference between them taking you or somebody else in the middle of the first round. If they like a couple of guys, they may go back to, well, when we had this guy in town, he wasn't on his phone. He was dressed nice. The other guy was late for the workout or getting over to the facility. And that might be the difference between a team taking you or not taking you, right?
Well, if guys are evaluated pretty evenly, what's going to happen in the draft room is you're going to have people championing other guys. And so if everyone just falls in love with you because your work ethic and, you know, they're interviewing you, and a lot of the teams employ psychologists, and I've been in the room, actually. I can't talk about it, but I've been in the room with a very, very good team sports psychologist interviewing lots of players that are very good players in the NBA now, and you get a feel for what they're like and how it'll fit in your culture. Every culture and every team is different. How they get along with management, coaches, those are aspects that a general manager is considering, especially if his coach is a mainstay. If your coach is there one more year, you don't care as much if you think you might make the move. So, yeah, you want to just sway as many of the odds to your side and get as many people on your side in that draft room saying, oh, we want that kid. And you can do that. Play great in the workout. Be a great teammate. Be super competitive. There's no doubt of that. But also be polished and professional and be no maintenance. The NBA wants as many no maintenance guys as they can. The high maintenance guys can be the superstars, but if you're not a superstar, you better be no maintenance.
Are there programs that get kids better ready for this process? I'm not talking about for the game itself, but for this process. Can you say, like, we get a kid from Kansas, we get a kid from Indiana, we get a kid from Duke, or are these kids all their own individuals when it comes to this stuff?
You know, I really don't think Florida State really coaches our guys up very, very hard. I don't know that it's a great track record to the NBA. They've got a kid now, Carl White, who had to go to overseas for a couple of years, but Eric Spoelstra likes him a lot with the Heat. But I think they all got to coach their kids to win for them, not for the NBA. It's much more about the kind of training they're getting afterwards. But also, I'm a big believer that all of us are just part of the process. I hate it when people credited me for the success a player had, whether it's in the draft, through the combine, or actually in his career. I'm just one of a lot of guys. Starting with his AAU coaches, his college coaches, his high school coaches, of course. He might have his own trainer from his hometown who sees him every offseason. We're all part of it. The player also deserves the most amount of credit or blame if things don't go well. He's got to wake up. That's why sometimes these kids are 18, 19. They make mistakes because they're young. At some point, you hope they grow up because it's on them ultimately.
What should we watch tonight with LeBron? How soon will we know, or how soon will you know, David?
Two things. One will be speed and ferocity at the pace of his play early on, and then can he maintain? In other words, he might be really fast and athletic. I could see a chase block, a couple of hammer dunks in the first quarter. They're up 15. Great. But can he maintain that? I'm not saying he's going to be lethargic from second one. But if he is lethargic in second one, that's a bad sign that there's something else going on. So watch him early, and can he maintain it throughout? And if the answer is yes, that it means that just something was bothering him. It could have been mental, too. I've not addressed that. It might have been a mental thing. Who knows? His child could have been sick. I'm a dad. I don't feel great when my kids aren't feeling well, especially when they're younger. So let's watch how he starts the game and how it goes through. And listen, as NBA fans, we hope that he's super healthy and he plays great. It'd be fun if Boston were to win, but likely Cleveland's going to win the series, and we want a healthy LeBron to play against Golden State.
Absolutely, we do. He's David Thorpe. He's an NBA writer and analyst and a trainer and a coach, too. You can find his book at Better Books bookstores and, of course, online. Google it. Basketball is Jazz, Stories and Lessons from a Basketball Lifer. Thank you, David. Talk to you next week.
Look forward to it. Thanks.
Thank you, David. David Thorpe with us. Great stuff right there on ESPN 700.